Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's a delight to have you with us, and I'm excited because Loretta Harrington is back with us today. I hope you have heard some of our conversations with Loretta. She's an amazing woman with an amazing story. And, in fact, we had a conversation with her on Monday. Now here it is Wednesday. We're back here with her again. She is the young lady that we have been talking to who actually met someone that she knows she knew in a previous lifetime over 100 years ago. That's a fact. She knows him. She knows where he is. He lives near her in the Washington, D.C. area, and she was one of the prime ones in helping him become a citizen to the United States because he's from Georgia, over near the Soviet, where the Soviet Union was. So anyway, it's an amazing story. Loretta has written a book about it. It's called A Piece of Soul Through the Heart, A Soul's Journey, which has gotten a lot of conversation, a lot of talk. But what we haven't focused on enough, I think, is Loretta's amazing background in the world of business. She has a remarkable story to tell. And today we're going to focus a little bit more heavily on that because we just haven't had the time to do it. Everybody wants so much to know so much about, is it really a fact that you could meet someone and really grasp the fact that you knew this person somewhere way, way back in your lifetime, in a previous lifetime? You have to understand and believe that there are previous lifetimes. We all have them. We just don't know about it. There are a lot of people who do and who believe it, and if you believe it, then you'll understand. But in any event, Loretta Harrington is so much on the level. She's a delightful guest, and Loretta, welcome. It's nice to have you back with us again from your headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia, near Washington. How are you today?
I'm well, Doug. Good to be back.
Good. Listen, I want to focus a little bit on your career. You've mentioned the fact that you worked in the Bush administration. You had a really great job in the Bush administration. We'll let you talk a little bit about that because you served a number of assignments reporting to the Senate confirmed assistant secretaries at the Department of Labor. You were present for a number of signings of bills and things like that. You've done a lot in your amazing career, other than meeting a young man, you know, that is here today that you knew 100 years ago. And I know that sounds strange to say, but we're saying it. And let's talk about how your career began. When you grew up, where did you actually grow up?
Oh, Doug, I grew up outside of the suburbs of Philadelphia. I'm a native Philadelphian, went to school outside in Delaware County, got married, completed my university work at Cal State University in Fullerton, California. I started my university work in Pennsylvania. It was interrupted because of a marriage and moving, and I was able to secure my business administration degree from Cal State Fullerton. And after that, I moved around a lot, and I had many different jobs.
Many people may be wondering, why'd you end up at Cal State if you were from the Philadelphia area? Is that because you were married and then you guys moved out to California? Or was
Yes.
there another reason you went to Cal State? That's it?
That was Okay. it. My husband was active duty Marine. I was working in the same government agency where he was posted. And we got married on a Friday night. And on a Saturday morning at 8:05, I was on an American Airlines flight to Los Angeles, California, where I spent the next several years in completing my education.
You know, it's very interesting because we've talked a little bit about your career, but you followed your husband abroad, didn't you? I mean, you lived
in
Japan, right?
Yeah.
How long
Yep.
were you there?
We were in Japan for 2 years, and it was probably the most fascinating experience that I've had, aside from moving around in the United States. Totally different culture, had the ability to travel far and wide throughout the Orient, meeting people, seeing life conditions, rather poor life conditions in some of the developing countries, but more importantly, learning about the Japanese culture and discovering a bit about what they went through as a result of World War II. I mean, actually seeing the sites as opposed to reading it in a history book, which we do as Americans, and then getting very, very close to a woman who survived Hiroshima when the atomic bomb was dropped in Hiroshima, and became very, very good friends with her and other Japanese people who, quite frankly, really, really like Americans.
Well, what was your husband doing, by the way? He was based in a Marine based in Japan. What was his position at that point?
Rick was the commanding officer of a Marine Air Group of jets in a rural area of Japan south of Hiroshima. We were in Iwakuni, and that's why it was so great, because we were not in a metropolitan area. We got to know the area quite well and the people also. So he commanded a number of squadrons and spent a lot of time outside of Japan working with other governments specifically Australia and South Korea. So that was a tremendous experience for him, for his career, and for me as his wife, and meeting other wives that were also stationed with us on the same Marine Air Base.
Did you, by the way, go with him to Australia or not?
I did not. Sadly, I could not go.
Well, I was just going to point out, you, like so many military wives, you know, were forced to live for fairly long stretches of time during your married life with your husband away, far away.
Indeed. And believe
me,
it's very difficult. And I think I would say that what we come away with is we're pretty resilient women as a result of those experiences self-supporting, independent. We take care of a lot of things when our husbands are gone, and we've got to make it all work when they get back.
No kidding. Did you work, by the way, while you were a military wife?
I did.
Well, you're still a military wife, but retired military wife, but I mean while you were on active duty.
Yes, Doug. Believe me, I did some jobs that I never thought imaginable. And not necessarily on what we would call a traditional career track of any kind.
Right.
We moved around. I took jobs. I learned different things. I worked for very small businesses in the Washington, D.C. area. I worked for very large businesses. I also worked for nonprofits. And what I did, Doug, is I used what I learned from all those experiences, and I put it to good use, because each and every employer or corporation that I talked with found it intriguing that I was able to make these transitions, like I said, pretty resilient. And in many ways, this is what organizations look for: resiliency, the ability to be flexible, to pivot from one project to another. And that's what I was able to learn throughout my experience when Rick was active duty, and then of course my government experience. We were both working, as I mentioned a moment ago, for the same Department of Navy, actually the same organization. So I have government experience prior to meeting Rick and subsequent to our marriage. And
well, I want you to talk about your appointment when you were working during the Bush administration, because that must have been very, very interesting, as well as, I would assume, kind of exciting. Was it?
It was it both. That was a surprise for me. I had been working in a nonprofit organization in the public policy area, working in telecommunications and trade, and made sense, trade did, because I lived abroad. So got a call one day from a colleague of mine who went to work for President Bush 43, offering me the opportunity to come in the administration. I turned them down because I very much enjoyed the work that I was doing, and I wanted to see some things completed. We were attacked on 9/11, as we so sadly remember, and I came home and I said to my husband, I said, I feel a sense of duty. I really want to do something to help the country, to help Americans. I'm going to call my friend back, and I'm going to tell her that I want to be interviewed. I was interviewed. I was hired within 30 days of that interview, and in October of 2001, I found myself in a very high-level position in the administration, one of three that I held in the 8 years that I was in Washington, D.C. So I was able to draw upon my experiences as a military wife and the many jobs that I had and the skills that I developed, and of course my education played a part too, and put it to good use. And it all comes under what I describe as service over self. Working with military wives, helping them through some tough times with their families, with themselves, keeping everyone together, because keeping in mind that I was the wife of the commanding officer and I had to show leadership, and I was the one that they would call and ask for assistance and guidance. I mean, that's just the role that I found myself in, and I put those very experiences to good use when I worked in the administration, which afforded me an opportunity of a lifetime, Doug. Working for a president, no matter who's in that Oval Office, is an honor, it's a privilege, and one never forgets all that was accomplished during that time and the opportunity to serve. So here I am still serving in a different capacity after I left the administration. Nonetheless, all of it came into play when I called my colleague back and I said to her, yes, I'm ready to serve again.
That is so interesting. Tell me a little bit about how close did you get, you know, you talk about working for the Bush administration. How close did you actually get to contact with the White House in those areas? Did you? Or were you in? Go ahead, tell me a little bit about it.
I did. My contact with the White House was mostly with his staff, working on specific agendas, items that the president wanted done, and setting up events for Mrs. Bush, for the president. He was very, very committed to women in business, and we did a series of events throughout the United States honoring women, small business women in particular, and women in corporations, and opening it up to anyone who wanted to participate to understand that the government was here to help people establish businesses, especially women in business. And for Mrs. Bush, her issue after the attack was to help the Afghan women. So I was fortunate enough to work at an agency at that time where we were able to coordinate an effort to offer microloans to Afghan women, something as simple as a sewing machine, and we worked with New York at the time in the garment industry, and bringing together people that wanted to help the women just get back on their feet. And it was a sewing machine, and it was fabric. Liz Claiborne was one of those organizations that worked with Mrs. Bush. And I happened to be there the day, I was invited, and I went. I saw the signing of that decree and that bill to help these women try to get their lives back together. And it gives me goosebumps to even think about it, because we have so much here and they have very little.
I can understand that. And you were there and watched the president sign it. Very good.
I did.
Now, today, you are, I mean, your experience there probably explains what you're doing today, because you're employed with the World Institute on Disability, and you serve as the it's a nonprofit, you serve as their program director. Tell me a little bit about what that job, the responsibilities there are. What do you do?
Well, I wear two hats now, external affairs and program management director. And for projects that we get into our home office in California, these are projects that look at issues such as training, employment of people with disabilities, helping these organizations specifically to look at policies that open up more doors, especially for our college students, who have a disability who are quite frankly a little afraid of stepping out of a university into the corporate world. And we're working with J.P. Morgan Chase right now on a wonderful initiative that opens up the worlds of organizations, making them more inclusive and more accessible to people with disabilities. So our funding comes primarily from the corporate side and from private foundations. Now, my external affairs work, I go on the Hill frequently, and I speak with legislators, congresswomen, congressmen, senators, talking to them about public policy and those policies that present barriers for people who have a disability, who've incurred a disability through perhaps an injury, and helping them to understand what these laws do to prevent people or at least inhibit many Americans from getting gainful employment. And I was up on the Hill yesterday talking about this very same thing with a congressman from Rhode Island who happens to be a wheelchair user. And 2 weeks ago, I was talking to a congresswoman whose son has Down syndrome, and she's a champion of opening up more employment opportunities for people with disabilities at all levels. This is work that I absolutely love doing. I'm back in touch with some of my colleagues when I worked in the Bush administration, so when they hear my name on the other end of the phone, they know exactly why I'm calling, because I want to keep attention in this administration to what we've tried to do in previous administrations.
That's so important, and that's so interesting, to say the least. And, you know, I have sitting in front of me here a copy of Empowering Professionals magazine. This came out just a couple of months ago in February, and you're on the cover, a major story about you, which is quite fascinating. And, of course, your book had something to do with this article, because they start out talking about it. Just to read the opening paragraph, it says here, with Loretta Harrington's eloquent memoir, Piece of Soul Through the Heart, A Soul's Journey, emerges an unflinching, revealing look at two soulmates who have shared lifetimes together and then reunited in this lifetime and are instantly and deeply connected. Generally heartfelt, thought-provoking, and infused with the impugned theme of soul connections and fast past lives, it divulges the friendship transpiring between two spiritual beings who have known each other for centuries. I love that. But it's true. All true, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. excuse me.
I was going to point out, with all you're doing and the busy life you have, where did you find time to sit down and write a book?
It happened just like this. One day I woke up and I said, my life experiences have to inform in some way. And the life event of my dad's passing, the experiences that I had as a military wife living abroad, working for a president, working in the field that I'm working in now, it has to be brought together in some way. And I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit down, write about this experience that I've had meeting with Zora, the main character in the book, and what an impression he made on me, and the book's title, A Piece of Soul Through the Heart. Well, let's just say I put my heart and soul into it, as I've done with everything in my life. And I decided that very day that I was just going to start writing. And that's what I did, Doug. I wrote and wrote and wrote. And weeks went by, months went by, and I said, I'm ready. I'm ready to get this book published. I'm ready to open up to the readers my own personal experiences and the reason why I chose to bring Zora into my life and to trust him and to give it all. I mean, I was all in with helping this young man find his way in the United States. And I think it has to go back. It has to go back to the work that I've done in my life, in the workplace, because don't we bring all of ourselves to work, everything and who we are, and mentoring, especially the work that I've done in mentoring, And now I find myself mentoring an immigrant from a former Soviet Union country, and I wanted to write about it. And I wanted to write it from the perspective that I found out that he and I had past lives, and there are no coincidences. And thus, this was not and continues to be, it's not a coincidence. This is my role in life. This is what I'm meant to do, educate and mentor and bring another soul to realize their full potential, just as I did in the corporate world and in government. All of us have an opportunity to reach our full potential if someone reaches out, lends a hand, points them in the right direction, tells them they're doing a great job, and also has the difficult conversation of saying, you're not quite measuring up. And those conversations I've had with Zora.
That is so amazing. I'm prompted to ask you if the book has changed your life at all. Do you think it has?
Yes, it has changed my life in this way. I'm far more open to sensitivities of others. I'm a Capricorn, and it's said that, it's been said that Capricorns fall out of a crib into the job market. And up to this point, I'm looking at things from a cold-hearted, just give me the facts. Where are we going? What needs to be accomplished? Why isn't it being done? And not having a sense of I think I got to give somebody a break here. It's all about getting the job done, and that's what it's done for me. It's giving me the opportunity and the sensitivity to say, I've got to be a little more empathetic because we do bring all of our whole self to a job.
Well, you've had such an amazing life and have done so many interesting things, and then to have this aspect pop up in your life where you meet this young man who – he came to be a helper to help your father when he was, very, very ill. And this goes back just about 9 years ago, and that's where you first met him. And I've been amazed because you've talked a good bit about how you were stunned when you met him, I don't think I asked you the question. I'm just wondering, did you two figure out at any one spot, or how did you two discover that you had known each other previously? Was there a specific moment that happened?
It was a moment at my father's funeral. Zora came to attend the funeral, and we had a lunch after the burial. And at this point, I had consulted with my transition coach, Alice DeVille, who I began working with her as I was transitioning into government and from the private sector. And she and I talked about this, and she has done a lot of work in this field. And she told me, and she traced our lives from centuries ago. And back to the lunch, because I wanted to share this with Zora, because I didn't want him to think that he had to leave. I left Pennsylvania, where I was, to come back to my home in Virginia, but he stayed in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area. And I sat with him quietly, and I said, Zora, you may not understand this now, but we have a very, very strong connection. And all I'm asking from you is keep an open mind. I'm going to talk to you more about this as you get to know me and I get to know you. But do you sense that you and I are going to follow? It wasn't a coincidence. And keep in mind, his English at this point was pretty limited. And he looked at me and he said, "I'm understanding what you're saying, but I don't really really get it just yet." He said, "But I know one thing: you will not lose me." And I said, "Okay." That's all I wanted to hear, and let's see where this takes us. And that was 2009.
Wow. You know, some people may be wondering how your husband responded to all of this, and yet if you read through the material and the articles on you, you point out that you had no idea eventually your husband would sponsor Zora's application to become a citizen and give him counsel and support to assimilate the culture in the Washington, D.C. area, and you were there when he became a citizen, right?
Oh, all true, all true. And Rick's love for me helped me to bring Zora into our lives. I mean, let's be honest, this is quite unusual. And as Rick and Zora got to know each other, and Rick's ability to mentor many a young man and woman in the Marine Corps, he took this on, and he signed the sponsorship application for Zora, and we went down to the federal court in Richmond, Virginia, the capital of Virginia, and there we witnessed Zora signing in along with 73 others from different countries from around the world. It was amazing, absolutely amazing experience. And Zora was the only one from the country of Georgia, not a surprise, it's a small country. But the judge that administered the oath met and shook hands with every one of those, and he thanked them for choosing the United States. And he said, not only do you know about our Constitution, he said, but I'm asking you to be a patriot. Embrace this country, love this country, defend this country if you are asked to do that, because you have made the decision to come here, and we have made the decision to accept you as citizens. Well, there wasn't a dry eye in the place.
Yeah, wow.
And it was, and I'm going to say this judge happened to be African American, so he knew exactly what he was asking.
That's a wonderful story. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yours is amazing. You know, it's the more I hear from you, I can just imagine the stories you tell when you're talking to groups. If you go to your website, Loretta has a magnificent website. It's lorettaharrington.me, and you will see pictures there of Loretta talking to groups at bookstores and other places who've come in to talk to Loretta about her book. I can imagine you'd be a fabulous speaker, you know, to corporate organizations with your background in the corporate world. I bet you would eagerly do that, wouldn't you?
If they asked. Oh, certainly would. I'd welcome the opportunity because let's be honest, I'm not something that's overly familiar to a corporation or executives or employees.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not there to tell them how to sell anything. I'm there to help them understand perhaps why they've chosen the field they're in and to embrace the work that they're doing and to feel a sense of accomplishment and to look at what they're doing as benefiting others in their own way. I mean, if it's a product or a service, it's surely going to benefit someone.
Boy, what a story. Loretta, thank you so much for being with us again. Your book, by the way, is available through the website. Again, go to the website. That website, again, is lorettaharrington.me. We've had the good fortune of having you join us a number of times, and you're going to be back with us again next Wednesday. That's a week from today. So we look forward to your coming back really soon and hearing more of your story. You just have a lot to tell. It's a wonderful story, and I thank you for being with us, okay? It's just great. And, you know, Loretta, I'm supposed to be having music play right now, but it doesn't want to play. Oh, there it comes. Here we go, music, because you deserve music as we go out. Thank you very, very much, my dear. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, that's how they do it. They go to your website, right?
Right you are, Doug. Thanks.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. We'll be back with other guests. Folks, join us because we have some of the most interesting people on radio anywhere right here on CUTV News Radio. And I'm glad you heard this because Loretta's story it's one for the books, I think. And you can read about it in her book. So read the book. It's called Peace of Soul Through the Heart, A Soul's Journey, and available again on her website, lorettaharrington.me. For now, I'm Doug Llewellyn, saying thanks again for being with us. We're looking forward to have you back soon. And don't forget, Loretta will be back next Wednesday at the same time, right here on CUTV News Radio. Take care.